just thinking about what is the incremental benefit of one particular choice over another, and is it worth the cost? So I think just taking a step back, even to consider it a rational calculation, right? So maybe you're saying, look, I'm acknowledging that this is the rational calculation, and I am choosing to override that because I'm talking to my child and this is what they want, and I'm actively choosing to override this rational calculation. I think if you choose to do that, then that may represent your values, and that's okay. But recognizing that there is this underlying cost-benefit analysis is a really important first step.
Paying for college is truly the intersection of psychology and finance, and that is exactly what Dr. Abigail Sussman of the University of Chicago's Booth School of Business has spent her career researching. As you head into what is likely a six-figure investment into your child and their future, Abby shares with you the psychology of money and gives advice on how to think about this so you avoid busting the budget and going into unnecessary debt when emotions become elevated when your family works on and talks about paying for college. I'm Lisa Marker Robbins, and I want to welcome you to College and Career Clarity, a Flourish Coaching production. Let's dive right in to a great conversation. Today on the podcast, I am thrilled to welcome Dr. Abigail Sussman. She's a professor of marketing at the University of Chicago Booth School of Business, and she does really neat research around the intersection of psychology, economics, and finances. Her heart and the goal of her research is to help improve the financial well-being of all of us. And so when I first became aware of Abby and thought, oh my word, I need to have her on the podcast, I thought, who better to help than families with college-bound students who are going to be spending a lot of money and making a big financial decision in their new future. Abby, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks so much for having me.
I am thrilled. So it's hard to even know where to start, but I want to start with you kind of explaining the idea that I heard you talk about mental accounting and what that is.
Mental accounting is basically the way that we as humans organize our money. So you can think about it as a parallel to financial accounting, is how businesses organize their funds and try to figure out what they should and shouldn't be spending on. And individuals do the same thing in their daily lives. And so one of the things that makes this interesting is sort of understanding why we do it and what some of the consequences are. And so we do it because if we wanted to make a single decision about buying a tube of toothpaste and we wanted to optimize that from an economic perspective, we would have to understand what are all of our available resources and other expenses that we're going to need to be pulling for those resources, both today and in the future. And it's basically an impossible optimization problem that we could try to solve for every single decision that we make. Or we could try to make this more tractable by essentially bucketing our money into different categories and trying to spend within these categories. And so therefore, rather than saying, how much money should I spend out of all possible money that I have? I'm going to be saying, well, typically I spend about this much money in the grocery store, and I can now think about this particular decision in the context of my grocery budget for this week, as opposed to my total expense budget for my entire life.
And which so that's would the basic be idea. Really overwhelming.
Really overwhelming. And so we basically use mental accounting as a way of simplifying our finances, and we can sort of map it onto a traditional budgeting process in terms of how we think about spending money. There are a variety of sort of consequences, but the main consequence, or the one that's talked about the most, is that it leads us to treat money as though it's not fungible. So what that means is that we end up treating money that we received, let's say, during as part of our regular income differently than money that we received in a bonus at the end of the year or as a Christmas present from a relative. We think about where we got money influencing the way that we spend it, and then we create budget categories, which then influence what we can spend the money on. So if I set aside a certain amount of money for spending on clothing, and let's say I've already spent all of my money on clothing, like I've already bought all the clothes I want at the end of the month, but I have money left in my clothing budget, I might then go and actually spend more on clothes because I have this extra money available versus I've overspent on what I predesignated for eating out. And so even though I want to have dinner out one more time at the end of the month, I've already spent that budget. And so I might be less likely to spend in that category. even if I have the same amount of sort of total budget left to spend.
So interesting. So you're talking about budgeting. And when I first became aware of your work, I thought, well, one of the problems that we encounter all the time in college planning. So if you talk to anybody working with high school families on that college bound journey is, how much should we save? What are the unknowns? What are the knowns? But even when they have a budget in mind, so often I see families get to that spring of the senior year. So it's April, senior year. And I hear families say, well, we're going to break the budget. We're going to spend more because we'll figure it out. We'll just figure it out somehow. And so as you're talking about this, you know, making those decisions, I'm like, I always get sad when a family, I see them overspending, and I've met so many people, as I'm sure you have in your research, where it's like they are saddled in debt from college that they may never get out from under, students and parents. And so like when I heard you, I was like, how do we help people have a different mindset or mental accounting so that they get to that April of the senior year and they make a wise decision instead of an unplanned or breaking the budget overspending on college?
There's so much here, right?
Right.
And so I think there are different pieces of it. So one is just, did you plan properly? Did you realize how much college was going to cost initially? And maybe you underestimated that. So that's one place where you could have a problem. Maybe I know how much it was going to cost, but there was no way I could realistically save the amount of money that I needed to save. So that sort of is the second piece of it. And then the third is to say, well, there actually is a certain amount that I think is the right amount to spend. And I'm going to ignore that and override that and say, well, this particular expense is so important that actually, even though it's more than I think I should be spending, I'm going to spend on it anyway. And so I think you can see those are in some sense, three distinct components of this process that could all work together to lead people to blow their budget in this way.
Right. So if we have a family who didn't save, I mean, we can't unring that bell because that has to start early and they're not going to suddenly get the money. But when they're setting a budget, we had talked earlier about, and I want to go down this road about sacred events, because I think perhaps this is influencing families and when they break the budget on college. So talk to our listeners a little bit about what you taught me are sacred events and how maybe this plays into that.
Yeah, so there are certain types of events, usually life events, that people are just willing to spend essentially an unlimited amount on. So you could think about spending on a wedding or spending on a funeral. And these are the sorts of things that just whatever it costs, I will find a way to come up with the money. If you resist that indulgence, then it's not just that you're being cheap or you are being actually frugal or wise with your money. It's almost a moral outrage that you wouldn't be willing to invest in your marriage. And so you can think about similarly, like when a baby is born, the amount of money that new parents spend on newborn children and all of the things that newborns need for exactly 3 month period. Each of these cases, you can think about both there being an actual need to make certain purchases, but this is coupled by really almost a moral need to be spending on certain types of events or certain types of occasions. And so I think that it's likely that in many cases that depending on who you are and what your background is, that you could similarly be thinking about spending on college in this way, that if I don't send my kid to exactly the place where they want to go, even if it costs four times as much and it's not totally obvious why that's a better fit for them or why that's going to lead to better outcomes for them. But if I'm not willing to spend as much as it takes, then that makes me a bad parent. That's one of the consequences that it could have to the extent that you think about spending on college as sacred in this way.
When you presented that term to me, that feels, as a mom myself, and I know you are too, but my kids are in their 20s and you're not yet at this college bound phase. It makes sense though. Like there's so many emotions wrapped up in that and this idea of it being a sacred event. So I would say as a college advisor, as a college counselor, I would say to families, Before you get too far down this road, or before you're hitting submit on applications, thinking about how sacred is this event? Like, by saying yes, I always say saying yes to something is always saying no to something else. And that's how I present opportunities to my coaching clients. So when you say yes to college being a sacred event, and then the sky's the limit on the budget, what are you saying no to? Are you saying no to your own retirement savings? Are you saying no to this next kid? I mean, I encourage families when they're talking about college funding to not think of it in a silo with that one kiddo. You know, you've got two, right? Mm-hmm. And I've got three. So you've got to think it globally as all of the kids. What will it take to get all of them through? If we start with the first one being a sacred event, then oh gosh, then the next one's going to be a sacred event. And then the train can really go off the track.
And I think that part of the point is it's not like you're choosing college versus not college. There are many, many different decision points along the way. And so just thinking about what is the incremental benefit of one particular choice over another, and is it worth the cost? So I think just taking a step back even to consider it a rational calculation, right? So maybe you're saying, look, I'm acknowledging that this is the rational calculation and I am choosing to override that because I'm talking to my child and this is what they want. And I'm actively choosing to override this rational calculation. I think if you choose to do that, then that may represent your values and that's okay. But recognizing that there is this underlying cost benefit analysis is a really important first step to saying, well, actually, maybe my kid will be better off going to a school that actually, maybe there's a reason why it's cheap, like it will be less expensive. Maybe it's because it's a better match actually, and that maybe the school will provide more support because it's a better match for my child or something along those lines. And so I think just making sure that you're understanding both what is the rational element and what is the emotional element and how do those two interact. And how do you want them to interact in your decision-making?
I think a lot of families don't start to have that conversation until those acceptances are coming in. I mean, we used to wait for is it a thick envelope or a thin envelope? And those days are long gone. When you open that email, what does it say? Or when you log into the portal, and if the conversation's waiting until then, that's going to be wrought with emotion rather than really thinking through what you're teaching us on the front end. Being more intentional. I love that you're teaching us this because we can have these early conversations. One of the things that I do with my clients is I say, okay, mom and dad, you're getting ready to spend six figures on college. Most are that I'm working with. And you have every right to say, hey, once a week, we're going to sit down with my sophomore, junior, senior, and we're going to have a college-bound conversation, or we're going to do something related to this. We're going to be very intentional with our time. And so building what you're saying, is this a sacred event? And is this a sky's the limit or is it not? What's right for our family and what's right for this particular kid and what aligns with their values, their goals, and their end goal of, you know, college is supposed to get us to a career, right?
Yeah. And I love what you're saying also about sort of having these very deliberate conversations along the way. So in my world, we talk about you can be in a hot state or a cold state. And so the basic idea is, don't go to the supermarket shopping when you're starving because you'll end up just buying, you know, Doritos and ice cream and going home and eating it.
Yeah.
Right. So versus if you go to the supermarket after lunch when you can be thoughtful about what you want to purchase. And it's the same thing with money, right? So if you wait until you get the email notification about a particular school to have that conversation, you're going to be in a hot state, right? So you're going to be very emotional about it. So the extent to which you can plan for that in advance is going to be really valuable.
Oh, I love those terms, hot state, cold state. I'm stealing them, Abby. I'm going to use them in the future.
They're not mine, so it's okay.
Good. You're like, use them away. I didn't invent it, Lisa. So I heard you previously talk about this idea that we somehow rationalize. I want you to tell the story because I'll screw it up. Talk about the $13 hot dog at the stadium. I'm going to just lead with that and let you explain it to our listeners.
Yeah. So there are, in my research, I look at this idea of exceptional expenses. And so these are one-time or infrequent purchases. And there are two paths to why we would want to spend more on them. So one is just from a motivational perspective. So let's say I'm thinking about buying a hot dog at a baseball game and it's $13. And that seems really expensive to me, but I really want it because it's so special, right? It's this special event. And I just want to indulge at this particular moment in time. So that's one reason why we might spend more than we normally would on a hot dog at a baseball game. But there's a separate path, which is also from more of a cognitive perspective, which is just how we categorize the world and how we think about budgeting for the world. And here, this path is, I think, a little bit more dangerous, or at least you might be less likely to be aware of it, which is that when I think about this particular expense, I think about it in isolation. And so I say, yes, it's more than I would normally spend, but how often am I at a baseball game and thinking about spending extra money on this hot dog, right? And so you say, well, it's only, you know, once a year do I go to this baseball game and spend this money. And so basically, if the hot dog were $26 or $52, it doesn't really matter because it just happens once in a blue moon. And so it's fine. On its face, that actually kind of makes sense, right? So even $50 once a year is not going to be the end of the world. But what happens is that there are lots of different expenses that happen only once or only a couple of times a year. And so when we think about not having a category for hot dogs at a baseball game, but instead we create a new category, which is now for all of the things that I spend money on only once a year, that ends up adding up quite a bit. And so one of the ways that we can end up overspending by a lot is by essentially failing to recognize that even one-time expenses happen quite a lot when we think about a category of one-time expenses.
You know, as you share that, everybody's probably going, well, college isn't, you know, it's 4 years. But I think as I have conversations with families, I hear them like, it's an experience. So that college experience is a one time, a once in a lifetime. And it's a gift that we're giving our kids before we send them, launch them off into the world. So I could see it getting categorized that way, right? So then it's, oh, it's okay to spend $50 on the hot dog or whatever on college. You know, and everybody's budget's going to be different, but I think starting with your budget to realize what's affordable, what makes sense for our family, what aligns with our values. It's not about right or wrong, but it's figuring out what works and should be for your family before you get to that hot state in the spring of the senior year.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or a hot state could even be fall of the senior year when they're hitting submit, you know, when they're finally that curated list, because once you've hit submit and we pass the deadlines, we can't add more colleges. So really by the summer between that junior and senior year, we're getting warm and nearing our hot state.
Yeah, absolutely.
You have a project rule about the 20% rule that you and I were talking before we came on to record about, like, could this work for college? What do we think? So share the 20% rule with our families.
Yeah. So I think that I was first talking about this in the context of like a home construction project where the basic idea is that things end up costing much more than you expect them to. And the more small component pieces that you have to fit together, the more things are likely to go over budget. And we can think that either when we're talking about just planning for the year or planning to go on a vacation where we might not think about all of the different associated costs. And so for me, I like to think about just adding 20% to whatever I expect the cost to be. You could have a much more methodical approach where you actually just try to make sure that you're including everything. But what I found for myself is that I almost never can think of all of the extra things. And so just adding a buffer is really helpful to get a better estimate of what I think the costs are going to end up being.
So your recommended buffer would be 20%.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on, I think
that's a great
college,
one.
You probably have a better sense of if people are at baseline, most likely to think about the cost of tuition, but not also the cost of room and board and textbooks and other sorts of fees. I don't know what the right ratio is. You might have a better sense of if that's 20% or if maybe it's more or less than that for this particular context. 20%, it's a rule of thumb, so it's definitely not going to be perfect, but often it works pretty well.
I think it could because a lot of families go in thinking only like, oh, tuition plus housing. And they don't realize they're charging you to go to orientation. And you know, you have to go to orientation and they're going to charge you for it. Welcome. Now you're here. Your fees vary greatly by major. You were in a major that did not have a ton of fees probably, but an engineering major or a chemistry major has a lot of lab fees. It's going to be more expensive to do that education. So textbooks will vary by major, or if you have to buy certain software, certain computer. So you've got that, but then all of that goes into cost of attendance, which legally has to be made available to families, but it's still an estimate. I remember when my daughter, who's entering her junior year of college, was going as a freshman, and you know, they had, oh, this is what you can expect for room and board. And there was an over $4,000 difference between the least expensive dorm and the most expensive dorm. So huge range. And now that you've introduced us to the idea of sacred events and like, oh, well, you only have one freshman year and they're going to meet their friends that year. And now all of a sudden, do I go with the, you know, the $10,000 a year dorm or the $15,000 a year dorm? Feels sacred.
Right. You're only going through this once, and don't you care about your child? Oh.
That's right. So based on your research, do you have advice for families? I mean, we have said, like, let's make these decisions while we're in a cold state, not a hot state. And I would add, because you just work with research and you're studying our mindset around all these things. And I would say, as a person who works in the college planning space, the time to be in a cold state is probably sophomore year through maybe only even first semester junior year. And then you're at least in a warm state, hot state, definitely by senior year. So I love that advice. And I would align that with that kind of timeline. I mean, I have, and I'll link to it in the show notes, but a college planning timeline for our families to kind of guide year by year what that looks like. So by spring of junior year, you're in a warm state. Do you have other advice that you think would be most helpful that we could leave families with as they're planning their mental accounting?
Yeah, I mean, I actually think the piece of advice that you just gave a couple of minutes ago about thinking about everything that you say yes to is actually something else that you're saying no to. And so this is what we call as opportunity cost neglect. And so people tend to not consider opportunity costs. And so what am I going to be, right? If I say yes to this, what am I saying no to? To the extent that we do have a limited amount of resources to dedicate, maybe not to our first child's education, but maybe to our second child's education, we love them too. And so trying to really understand what are the opportunity costs? Because we don't spontaneously consider opportunity costs in most cases. And so recognizing what the trade-offs are, I think, is going to be really important. And so that's another piece of advice that I just echo that you gave, that I think is so powerful and is not intuitive at all, because it's so easy to just get lost in the moment and to be focusing on the reason why this is so important. And there's just nothing else that could possibly be as important. When if you stop to think about it, actually, maybe there are other things that are as important. And I think more than that, really focusing on what are incremental benefits and incremental costs of each of these choices. Because to the extent that there are a series of choices of, you know, what is the dorm that my child is going to live in? And, you know, what are the costs of particular majors? And what are the costs of particular majors at one school compared to another school? In each of these cases, you don't have to make an all or nothing decision. It's not as though, like, well, I've already decided that we're going to go to this college, and so therefore we need to spend the most possible on every single sub-decision at this college. Or, you know, on the flip side, maybe we've decided that we're going to go to a college that's more affordable, and that's going to give us flexibility. One of the benefits is that then we'll be able to be freer in our spending on some of these other elements. And we're not going to have to be as focused on every single decision along the way because we cut back upfront. And I think often when we think about costs and fit, by finding the right fit for you, you can often achieve really high quality without necessarily needing to trade off on at a sort of more cost-efficient level.
Yeah, I agree. I think people get caught up in the brand name side of that to a greater degree than they need to. And study after study shows that if you look at like the top Fortune 100, 500 list, you see a wide variety of institutions that the people who are leading, doing very well, leading big organizations came from. The Ivies are on there, down to the state, whatever school, or even a community college start. So,
and I think thinking very specifically about what your particular goals are is going to be critical too.
I one time had a student that I was working with who she very proudly got into Vanderbilt, a great institution, super excited, but she was going into education. She wanted to be an elementary teacher. And for her family, this was one of those, they were in a hot state. It was April senior year. And they came to me and they're like, we'll work it out. And I just had to say, you just told me that she's going to graduate with $80,000 in debt. And she wants to go into, this was about 15 or 20 years ago, but she's going into a very wonderful profession and she's going to help and be amazing. But she's going to have a very hard time getting out from under that debt ever. And so don't make that decision in the hot state. She ended up not going to Vanderbilt. And I said, hey, you've got bragging rights the rest of your life. So. Well, Abby Sussman, I knew it was going to go too fast, but I thank you for making time, for saying yes to College and Career Clarity and helping families. Thanks for being on.
Thanks so much for having me.
I have to believe that Abby's advice will save you both angst with your teenager and money on college by helping you set a firm college budget before you emotionally hit a hot state. That might be hitting submit on college applications or opening acceptance emails. Those days are coming and there's no pause button on the College Bound journey. My weekly College Bound challenge for your family discussion time this week is one of those uncomfortable ones. It's time, no matter what year your teen is in high school, to start discussing who is paying for college, how much, and where will that money come from? So have the discussion. And while you may not yet be able to make a final decision on how much you are willing to spend, you can set a date by which you will make that decision. And I strongly encourage you for that date to be before your student starts college applications and you're entering a warm state or the hot state on making that final decision. If today's episode was helpful to you, please share with a friend who needs this too. Sharing, following the podcast, rating, and reviewing helps us resource more students to launch into a successful future. That's my life's work. Thank you for listening to the College and Career Clarity podcast, where I help your family move from overwhelmed and confused to motivated, clear, and confident about your teen's future.